Welcome to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, have you early voted yet, Florida? A lot of you have. Yes, Election Day, well, it's coming up Tuesday, but millions of Floridians have already voted. More people, in fact, have voted so far in this midterm election than did 4 years ago altogether. So the turnout is up, but that may mean shorter lines at your polling place come Election Tuesday. Tom, it may also mean, just overall, when the numbers are tallied, a much higher than usual turnout for a midterm in Florida. A lot of engagement around our governor's race and our Senate race here in the Sunshine State.
Historically, Melissa, we've seen about half of registered voters show up for midterm elections. Maybe we could see more than half of registered Floridians show up and have their voice be heard during this election. How about it? During the last two races for governor in 2010 and 2014, those were decided by fewer than 65,000 votes each. And in close races, from the governor's race to the U.S. Senate race, even a collection of U.S. House races this year, turnout matters all across the Sunshine State, no doubt about it. So what's driving you to the ballot box this fall? If you're registered to vote but don't plan on voting, maybe you're on the fence whether or not you're going to show up, why not? Why won't you have your voice heard at the ballot box? 305-995-1800 all across the state of Florida. Join our conversation here on the Florida Roundup. Talking politics, of course, the last Friday before Election Day. Adam Smith is with us, political editor at the Tampa Bay Times. He joins us from the media organization studios. So, Adam, pull out here and talk to us about the early read on vote by mail and early voting turnout. What are some of the trends that you've seen, and how do they compare to 4 and 8 years ago?
Well, the good news for Democrats is you can see they're narrowing the margin. They're better off than they were 4 years ago and 8 years ago, or 2 years ago and 4 years ago. And the bad news is that Republicans are doing really well too. So the bottom line is, you look at these numbers, and you can find 10 very valid reasons to think the Republicans are going to win a lot of these races and do the exact same for the Democrats.
It's so unpredictable this time, Adam. You know, I looked at the early voting numbers before we went on the air. The last I checked, Republicans were up over Democrats in early voting by about a point and a half. The MPA vote is another, not quite third of the vote, more like 20% of the vote. Now, let me ask you, as someone who's watched the way these independent voters go in this state, they can really make the difference in these one-point elections. As we look at the governor's race, the early polling seems to show that independents in the state are breaking for Andrew Gillum, the progressive candidate for governor, the Democratic mayor of Tallahassee, over Ron DeSantis, the former Republican congressman from the Palm Coast and Daytona Beach area. Now, that is not to say that DeSantis won't win this election. Because as you pointed out, Republican turnout is really high. It is being matched by this fervent Democratic turnout of voters that are trying to send a message to President Trump that they want to check on his agenda. Here in Florida, we've got an equally robust Republican turnout. So based on what we know about independent voters who are kind of hard to poll and kind of hard to data track, how do you think the independent vote is going to break here at the very end? And how do you think it will make the difference in the governor's race between Gillum and DeSantis?
Yeah, I think that's a great question and observation, because I do think the shorthand is the NPA, no party affiliation vote, I think really could make the difference. And again, you can spin it both ways, that most of the polling shows a definite skew toward the Democrats on that independent vote. On the other hand, we can look at the people who voted so far, and it strongly skews an older white voter, which usually means Republican voter. And then the only thing I'd add is, I'm at the point that I really do think we need to just ignore all these polls.
And
I'm
not. Amen, Adam. Yes.
I don't trust them. I think we're in an era where nobody really knows what the electorate is, and they're all within the margin of error. So these are coin toss races.
Exactly.
Melissa and Adam, I agree with you about the polls. I mean, we saw how flawed they were in 2016, certainly, in the presidential race. We saw how flawed they were on the Democratic side in the primary in August in this month. The polling technology is not getting into the places where the voters are increasingly, or at least recently, coming from, or at least showing up in ways that they haven't in the past, Adam. And so what we can respond to, though, is the early voting data, because that's what we know of people who are sending their ballots in by mail or showing up at these early polling places. So with that in mind, what is that telling you about the kinds of folks that are getting engaged, the kinds of Floridians that are getting engaged in this campaign?
Well, it seems like every Floridian is getting engaged. I mean, really, there's great turnout among Republicans, great turnout among Democrats. We're seeing increased Black turnout. We're seeing increased younger voter turnout. So I don't mean to be waffling, but I think there's no real clear conclusion one can draw from these numbers, other than there's a good chance we're going to have record turnout.
It's 305-995-1800. We're live statewide at this lunch hour for the Florida Roundup. Just a few days left till Election Day. Give us a call. Let us know who'll get your vote as we talk about the governor's race, which has drawn national attention. And Adam Smith, what about the nasty tone between these two candidates, in particular issues of race, have really driven the rhetoric around the contest between Gillum and DeSantis? Gillum, you know, the most progressive major candidate for statewide office, maybe ever in this state, unlike a lot of other African-American candidates in recent years, has talked very bluntly about what he perceives to be racist rhetoric on the part of his opponent, Ron DeSantis. DeSantis, for his part, and DeSantis voters have really resented that. These accusations of dog whistle charges. There have been these minstrel voice robocalls that a third-party group populated out in across the state to try to portray Gillum negatively. And then on the other hand, DeSantis has been trying to draw the attention back to the narrative he would like to draw about Gillum, which is what he has mentioned in both debates, the federal corruption probe at Tallahassee City Hall. You've covered a lot of governor's races in this state. How does this one compare in terms of the antipathy, you know, the animus that these two men have toward each other?
I think we've had a lot of very hostile, nasty campaigns in this state. This definitely has more of a racial element, largely because we have the first Black nominee at the top of the ticket. We did have Kendrick Meek in 2010 at the top of the ticket as the Democratic nominee for U.S. Senate. Mm-hmm. But in that case, it was muted because Charlie Crist was running as an independent. So Meek sort of seemed like he never really had a chance in that case. This is a different one.
And this state is different in 2018 than it was in 2010 in terms of where the voters are, where the demographics are. The state has shifted on a number of issues. Do you see that as being a decisive factor in this race, or is it still just too unpredictable to call?
I think it's probably a factor, and I think, like you say, it plays both ways. I mean, the other difference is in the shadow of Donald Trump, race has automatically become a big issue. Fairly or not, he's a racially polarizing figure. And, you know, one of Gillum's more memorable lines of the campaign was, "I'm not saying Ron DeSantis is a racist, but racists seem to think he was." And that's pretty accurate. I mean, Ron DeSantis has a striking number of extremist fringe people that are that he keeps winding up somehow associated with. Ron DeSantis came out of the box with that, at best, clumsy comment about monkey this up. And then on the other side, I think Ron DeSantis is absolutely right to say, you know, he asked Gillum in one debate a valid question about an ongoing FBI investigation. And Gillum, actually he did it in two debates, suggested Ron DeSantis was being playing racial politics, which was clearly unfair. They were valid questions.
305-995-1800. You could also send us a tweet at Florida Roundup. What's motivating you to vote? Have you voted already? Your experience is early voting. Vote by mail. What about Election Day? Are you all set? You got your plan together? You have your sample ballot ready to go? 305-995-1800. Speaking with Adam Smith, the political editor for the Tampa Bay Times. We've got a lot more to come here on this edition of the Florida Roundup. One question here from Jane in Jacksonville Beach. She wanted to know if there's any data, Adam, on how many Republicans may have changed registration to Democrats, and I'll add vice versa. I don't think that kind of party swapping data is available, is it?
Yes. I wish people would refrain from asking me questions that I don't really know the answer to. But
don't we all?
I do believe we had a story that to my surprise, there were a fair number of people that had done that, and it was very surprising. That said, I don't know that it's going to be decisive. Yeah. We're so ingrained and locked into our partisanship these days, for better or worse.
Yeah, and of course, in a general primary or a general election, of course, party participation is not necessary in order to vote, so you get the non-party affiliates to vote as well. All right, let's go to the calls here. Let's begin on line two, and Brandon, Mike has been patient. Go ahead, Mike. You're on the radio.
Hi. How are y'all?
Good.
Excellent. I early voted, and I highly suggest that people do it, because my main concern, and I had, you're allowed to bring your sample ballot in, by the way, in case people didn't know. And even with that, it still took me 5+ minutes to do my ballot. And my concern is in the larger counties, Dade, Broward, or Orange, Duval, and so forth, where the Democrats are going to need to get their votes, I think the story is going to be long lines. I don't know what the weather is going to be. Hopefully it'll be like it has been the last few, last week's been fantastic. Mm-hmm. So if that continues, that will be a non-issue. But just the sheer number of the constitutional amendments will be. And I really have major concerns about that. The other thing I noticed is that the other voters in the last election, 2014, there was almost 100,000 votes that people did. Right now, that's really low. It's not even breaking 30,000. So clearly, people do want their vote to count. It's not a protest vote.
You mean other vote? You mean somebody? You mean a vote for neither of the major party candidates?
No. Not the NPA. No, the NPA is way up. The non-party affiliate, they're way up.
What do you mean by other voter, though?
Right, it's the other. There's actually four categories, and that one, the Democrat, Republican.
You're talking about voter registration, right, Mike? Is that what you're talking about?
Correct.
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Right, because when you go to the statistics website, it shows you four.
Yeah.
And the other.
But there's multiple Libertarian Party, Constitution Party, Green Party, all of those kinds of things.
And they're little slivers of the overall electorate. But you think they could make a difference in this race?
Well, the last.
Go ahead, Mike.
The last election, they did, because there was almost 100,000 votes.
So
just for us,
I got you. And Jill Stein running as the Green Party candidate in 2016. Tom, we had Jill Stein on another program
and Gary
back
Johnson.
In the fall of 2016, and Gary Johnson, and those candidates around the margins can pull votes. We don't have a major candidate like that in this race, though, and I appreciate the call, though, because there are so many factors that could come into play as to who is victorious here and which direction the state goes. Let's go now to Lisa in Tampa. She's been holding. Great to have listeners calling in from our new market in Tampa here on the Florida Roundup. Hi, Lisa. You're on
the
air. Go ahead.
Yes, my question is, I don't understand why, when y'all speak about Andrew Gillum, why do y'all refer to him as saying he, like he speaks rhetoric when he doesn't speak any rhetoric? He speaks very positive. He doesn't use, any dog whistles or anything like that. So I don't understand why, when I hear you guys speak about him, or just the media period, why do they refer to him as using rhetoric when
okay,
I do not
sure.
believe he used any rhetoric?
You think he's just speaking plainly. Yeah, I
yes,
get you.
Yes.
And you know, and that's a turn of phrase I would use about both of these candidates. I didn't mean it in a negative way. But what I hear you saying is that you like Gillum because you think he's just speaking plainly to the voters. Is that
yes.
fair to say? Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well,
yes.
that's Lisa in Tampa. And Lisa, I appreciate that. Adam Smith, Tampa Bay Times. Gillum's campaign certainly has been exciting to watch in terms of the way he has brought a sort of charisma to the campaign trail that has excited voters, particularly voters that might not always vote in these off-year elections. Will his charisma and his message, though, and his straightforward talk about his agenda items for Florida, which would be a big departure for this state in terms of governance and which direction the state's going politically, will it be enough to carry him over the line in this split state, which tends to decide these elections by about a point? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, two things. I've had a conversation with several people lately, and we think there is never, certainly not in 50 years or more, been a candidate for governor who's had a great deal of charisma like Gillum does. You know, I mean, with all
right.
respect to Lawton Chiles and Buddy, I mean, and yeah, Buddy McKay and Bob Graham, mm-hmm. these were not, or Jeb Bush, these were not great speech makers, stem winders, who could really inspire and fire up a crowd the way that Gillum does. In terms of will it make a difference, I think if we wake up on Wednesday morning or Tuesday night and Ron DeSantis is the governor-elect, I think a lot of Democrats will say, if we couldn't win this one with a charismatic candidate, a fired-up Democratic electorate, a fairly listless Republican candidate in Ron DeSantis, and an unpopular president in a midterm election, what can we win?
Let me squeeze in another call before we go to break here. Port St. Lucie, Tony, you are on the radio. Go ahead.
Oh, wonderful. In regards to the Gillum race, also for something for in this area with the pollution and the way that the water quality is, going back to Rick Scott, who will be voting again, to some people actually expect me as an individual that would just go in line with Trump and with Trump's current ecological policies. I felt like that would also, on a local level, hurt the economy, hurt this whole entire mm-hmm. area, and hurt other different parts of Florida that are heavily based on tourism.
Yeah.
Beaches getting shut down during the summer.
Tony, the phone's kind of coming in and out here, but I think we get the gist of what you're saying. The environmental crisis really motivating Tony in Port St. Lucie, which is on the front lines of the blue-green algae crisis that we experienced this summer and experienced just a couple of summers ago. The environment, Adam, really has loomed large in this campaign, not just for voters, but for the candidates, for governor, and also for U.S. Senate, in part because there's a significant record to run on in the form of Rick Scott and his stewardship over the past 8 years.
Yeah, and Rick Scott's got so much money that he's able to, at least some extent, minimize it, because he can spend so much money painting Bill Nelson as one of the culprits for not doing enough in the U.S. Senate for so long. And Rick Scott has certainly been all over a lot of images of him in the Everglades and whatnot, but clearly it does not help him. And it was interesting to see in the primary, where Rick Scott had no real credible opponent, he did quite poorly comparatively in Martin County, that mm-hmm. is one of the sort of ground zeros.
One of the hardest hit counties. Well, we'll continue talking about that, whether it's red tide or education, healthcare, guns, what motivates your vote this midterm? That and more, including a look at Pinellas County, that swing county on the west side of Florida. We'll dive deep into those vote numbers here on the Florida Roundup as we continue. Back in a moment, we're with Florida Public Radio. Your calls after this, too. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. Thanks for listening this week. In this politically fractured state that we live in, where registered voters are split essentially three ways between Republicans, Democrats, and no party at all, Pinellas County, home to Clearwater Beach and St. Petersburg, really embodies this split here in the Sunshine State. It may not look like Florida racially, but Pinellas County, at least politically, Melissa, it's kind of the mini-me of Florida.
Just the two of us, right?
Yeah, that's
remember
right.
that scene?
Yep.
Pinellas County and Florida. I hope Florida isn't seen as Dr. Evil by the world. Maybe it is by some people. 305-995-1800 as we continue taking your calls on the Florida Roundup and talking about Florida's status as the ultimate swing state. And within that swing state, Pinellas is the ultimate swing county. Adam Smith of the Tampa Bay Times still with us and now joining us as well from our member station in Tampa, WUSF's Mark Schreiner. Mark, good to have you with us.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And Pinellas County is fascinating, and this certainly isn't the first election that people at the national level are really drilling down into the numbers in Pinellas, because the conventional wisdom is as goes Pinellas, so goes Florida, and as goes Florida, so goes the country. So is that an accurate perception about Pinellas County, and what is it about the demographics in that county that make it so perfectly purple?
I think, as you say, Melissa, the idea that looking at the numbers, you look at the registered voters in the state, it's about 35% Republican, 37% Democrats, 27% NP, no party affiliation. In Pinellas, it's 35% Republican, 36% Democrat, 28% NPA. So it mirrors Florida perfectly.
And what is it about that county and the amenities and attractions in that county that draw this kind of mixed demographic? Because, you know, when you read a book like, say, The Big Sort, you learn that increasingly Democrats and Republicans are sorting themselves into different places. They don't even want to live in the same neighborhoods and the same communities with each other. Pinellas is sort of an outlier in that respect.
Yeah, I think because it is that combination of urban but a lot of small town feel to it. So you have that blend of a city like St. Petersburg that is a larger metropolitan area with a more democratic population. And then some of these smaller beachfront towns like Safety Harbor or Oldsmar, where you have a little more of a small town Republican feel to it.
305-995-1800 to join us.
Mark, politically it mirrors Florida, but racially, ethnically, age demographics, it doesn't at all. So how do you explain that? How do you on how it is certainly whiter than the rest of Florida?
Yeah,
it is slightly older than the rest of Florida, but yet the politics are roughly the same.
I think what it comes down to, as you say, it's, you know, 82% white, 10% African American, small percentage of Hispanic.
Yeah.
I think because it's the idea that people, the people that choose to live there somehow just end up breaking down in politically in these certain patterns. I'm not a sociology professor, so I haven't really figured out why, you know, people are moving to the area other than it is a good community in terms of affordable housing, to some extent, a good job market to some extent, so that it has the tourism draws of course, the beaches, mm-hmm. the Gulf beaches, as well as being some of the metropolitan things that St. Petersburg, a very arts friendly, a very community friendly welcomes.
And any idea yet, as you look through the early voting numbers, which way is Pinellas County trending, Mark?
That's actually very interesting. I just looked at the numbers from this morning, and I heard Adam breaking down the state a little bit earlier. What we're seeing in Pinellas is a very good improvement for the Democrats. They're up almost 2% in comparison to 2014's early voting. Now, again, remember that these are just because of the way they're registered. That doesn't mean people aren't crossing the party lines. But about 2% increase on the Democratic side, a 0.5% decrease for the Republicans, and a lot more no-party affiliates voting, about 2% increase in their turnout, comparing 2014 to 2018 so far. What's interesting in terms of total numbers, because we are seeing such a larger turnout in early voting and folks voting by mail, Republicans are only about 500 votes over their 2014 totals. Democrats, almost 5,000, same number on the NPAs.
Adam, what do you make of that in Pinellas County, that kind of difference in early turnout amongst the parties?
Yeah, and Pinellas is, leads the state in terms of early voting. Our supervisor of elections has really pushed that. I just add something in the demographics. One of the things that really stood out with Pinellas County statewide was this was a county that twice voted for Obama, was really starting to be seen as a pretty safe blue county, and then swung pretty significantly Donald Trump in the last election. And I think it's a whiter state than most of Florida.
Yeah, it helped deliver Florida for the president. Yeah.
Do you think it's fair, Adam, to continue thinking of Pinellas County as the ultimate bellwether county in both an off-year election like this one or a presidential year? Does it deserve its reputation, or have things just gotten too unpredictable for us to look at this through this lens anymore?
I think
at it through past elections.
That's sort of a new title for Pinellas County. Like I say, it used to be sort of a solid blue county, and Hillsborough County next door, home of Tampa, was the one that was the bellwether. Now that really is a solidly blue county, but I do think that's going to be maybe the question of the election. These voters who supported Obama and then went for Trump, they were sort of underestimated, overlooked by pollsters, etc. Are they going to turn out for Ron DeSantis and Rick Scott in this election?
Well, how about we go to Pinellas County, Tarpon Springs, Henry on line 12. Go ahead, Henry. Thanks for your patience. You're on the radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. I just had a kind of a general question. In light of the 2016 election and maybe some people who weren't inclined to admit that they were going to be voting for Donald Trump, I noticed that did affect polling numbers. It was kind of unpredictable that Donald Trump was going to be elected. In light of that, and the fact that candidate DeSantis has not been very shy about aligning himself with Donald Trump, do you think that we're going to have a similar impact in people who aren't inclined to admit that they're going to be voting for candidate DeSantis that end up doing? So I guess my question is there anything else that we can look to other than just the polling numbers to get an indication of how people are going to vote? And also, I'd like to say that I already proudly sent in my mail-in ballot for Mayor Gillum, so I hope things turn out right.
There's one Gillum vote in Pinellas County, Henry in Tarpon Springs. and hopefully the signature on the vote by mail matches there as well. That's another story for another time. Adam, how about Henry's thoughts there on kind of the phantom voters or telling one story to pollsters and another story to the actual ballot?
I do think that's a good point, and I think that's another reason why I'm just going to try to tune out the polls, because yeah. I think he's absolutely right. There are a lot of Trump voters that don't really want to say they're voting for Trump because they think that the pollster, the media, is going to cast them as a racist or something, so they don't quite say it. And again, I think it goes back to the great mystery, especially in Pinellas. It looks like it's virtually dead even in terms of Democratic and Republican turnout, which speaks well to the Democrats. That's a good sign for Democrats. Is what happens to that, to those non-party affiliated voters, and where do they break?
And we'll go back to your calls here on the Florida Roundup in just a moment. Call us from anywhere in the state. We are live all the way from the Panhandle down to Key West, 305-995-1800. Lots of tweets coming into the show at Florida Roundup. Lane tweets us from Jacksonville. The Republicans say socialism is nearing. The Democrats say they're all racist. How about sticking to the issues at hand, she tweets. And here is a tweet from another listener. Why not tell us how many of the million or so Floridians who lack health care in this Republican state because Medicaid has not been expanded have died as a result? Surely it kills more of us than terrorism ever has. Okay, let me ask you both, Adam and Mark, about health care and how that issue is going to break, not only in the governor's race, but also the Senate race between Bill Nelson and Rick Scott. Do you see that being a driving issue for voters? Could it be one of the things around the margins that makes the difference in this race? Adam, let's begin with you.
I think it absolutely. I mean, in poll after poll after poll, that is the number one issue, followed a little bit by the economy and jobs. But I think absolutely, and I think the Republicans are clearly on the defensive on that issue, on the issue of pre-existing conditions. They have been struggling to come up with a consistent and believable answer, because some of these people like Ron DeSantis have voted umpteen times to do away with Obamacare, and which would do away with protections for pre-existing conditions. In this case, he didn't even put out a health care plan of any kind until 10 days before election
day. Last week, right. 305-995-1800. Let's continue with the phone calls in South Florida, Miami-Dade County. Pinecrest, Karina on line 5. Go ahead, Karina. Thanks for your patience. You're on the radio.
Yes. Hi. I'm a not NPA voter, traditionally voted Republican, and I'm also Hispanic. And
your dog seemed to like that.
And a dog owner at that, too. Right.
He was all happy about that one.
Yeah. I just think that the whole tone of the campaign from the beginning, DeSantis in particular, with his primary ad and the immigration against Hispanics, and also quite racist from the start, has completely turned me off, and I don't think he would adequately represent me. So even though I disagree with Gillum sometimes, or not so sure how much of a great governor he would be, I can't vote for a Trump lackey, and I voted for Gillum.
And you normally vote Republican, you said?
Pretty much, even though I'm independent,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks for that. You know, Mark Schreiner, I know we want to talk a little bit more about red tide over in your area of the state. We'll get to that in a minute. But first, you know, let me ask you about this, because by and large, this governor's race has been nationalized due to the presence of President Trump, his omnipresence in this. At the same time, we see men, white men in particular, really sticking with Donald Trump. But more and more you hear, and the polling and the data shows this, women, including women that normally vote Republican and women that are independent but tend to vote Republican, are turned off by this president. That is a hill to climb for Ron DeSantis. Will it be enough of an obstacle for him, though, to deny him the governor's mansion? Women voters just being turned off by the president's rhetoric on immigration and other issues and tagging that to Ron DeSantis. What are you hearing from Pinellas County?
Well, not really hearing anything specifically that specific about, you know, DeSantis. I think that, I mean, as you say, obviously what the president says has this reflection down ticket for Republicans. But again, as Adam said, you know, sometimes the polls and the discussions beforehand may not be, you know, a true representation of what we're actually going to see come Tuesday.
That's right. I think both Tom and Adam hit the nail on the head. The polling is no longer an absolute guide. We are in new times when we talk politics here on the Florida Roundup. More of your calls in a moment at 305-995-1800. Just a few days to go until Election Day, which is Tuesday. You can vote through the weekend, early vote, and then you're done. If you didn't get to it then, turn out on Tuesday. It's the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
Let's take some of your phone calls here, Melissa. Let's go Port Orange next. Wayne, you're on the radio. Go ahead, Wayne.
Well, regarding the governor's race, I don't doubt at all that DeSantis is racist, as is Trump. I also don't doubt at all that Gillum has his legislature. There's some corruption in Tallahassee. I don't doubt it. I think the reason that I cannot vote for DeSantis, though, is because he just never showed up for his Senate sessions. He has uniquely the worst record for attendance.
You mean I'm sorry, Wayne, you mean the United States House of Representatives?
In the representative, yes, yeah. You're exactly right. Sorry. And because of that, what possibilities there? What did he do for voting for Florida? In the same way, Bill Nelson, at least, did show up and was solidly in his voting, as far as I could see, pro-Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the reason I could not vote for Rick Scott was because I am aware that he was the head of the HCA at the time that it perpetrated the largest fraud in Medicare history.
Yeah, got it, Wayne. Thank you very much for your input there. Wayne, going back to, of course, the charges, Adam, that Rick Scott has faced since the beginning of his political career 8 years ago, but has been successful in fending those off. And, Senator Nelson has and his supporters have been trying to hit that again, bringing it back here as Rick Scott tries to kind of graduate from the governor's mansion up to the United States Senate.
Yeah, and I would just, before I forget, I don't think that's correct about Ron DeSantis' attendance record. I know last time I looked, he had a decent attendance record. It got worse as he campaigned.
Mm-hmm.
But on the Medicare fraud, yeah, I mean, that's a good question. It did not work. One would have thought that nobody could be elected in Florida, of all places, with that kind of baggage. But when Alex Sink ran against him and Charlie Crist ran against him, it wasn't enough of an issue for them to overtake him.
And in the time we have left with you, Mark Schreiner, the red tide issue over in Tampa, St. Pete, how much is that going to affect the vote, do you think?
Well, we're going to see. We've seen some red tide in Pinellas County. The governor, Scott, giving another $3 million in red tide cleanup funds from the Florida Department of Environment Protection just yesterday to Pinellas County. That's brings the total to just over $6 million. But when, you know, the governor tries to do that, Senator Nelson comes back. Senator Nelson meeting with marine science experts and business leaders in St. Pete's about 2 weeks ago or so. So they're trying to keep it on the table because all along it's been, you know, both sides blaming the other for red tide. I think red tide will be more of an issue in southwest Florida, further, you know, Fort Myers area, further south there. Because Pinellas County has seen some, but it's going to have an effect in Pinellas County. I just don't think it's going to be as huge as and pronounced as some places south of here.
Adam Smith in southwest Florida, you see the red tide phenomenon affecting the Republican turnout. It's been a stronghold for Republicans for a good long time in that part of the state.
Yeah, I mean, theoretically it would, but I think Republican turnout has been ginormous in Southwest Florida so far. It's been huge. So unless a lot of those Republicans are rejecting Governor Scott, I doubt they are.
My youngest used to say it was jamominous. It was jamominous. so
better.
There you go. Right. Adam Smith, the political editor with us from the newsroom inside the Tampa Bay Times. Always lots to talk about in that area. And that's why we brought along from our sister station in Tampa, WUSF's Mark Schreiner. Adam and Mark, thanks so much for sharing your thoughts with us here today on the Florida Roundup.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be talking about one of the amendments on the ballot. That is coming up with more of your phone calls. 305-995-1800 as the roundup continues. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks again for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. So excited to be getting calls from all over the state this Friday here on the roundup as we talk politics. And the next election in Florida, well, it could see more than 1 million new eligible voters. That's because Amendment 4 is on this year's ballot. If it's okayed by all of you, the voters, at 60% approval, Amendment 4 would restore the right to vote for convicted felons like Alicia Trammell. Alicia was convicted of armed robbery in her 20s. She's now 48.
Being a part of society, it's my right and I want it. So they didn't stop me from paying taxes when I got out.
Florida is one of four states where convicted felons do not get back their right to vote without a decision from a state officer or board. Now, in Florida's case, it's the clemency board that has to make that decision. The clemency board is made up of four individuals: the governor, the state attorney general, the agriculture commissioner, and the chief financial officer. We heard from one of our listeners, Thomas Ortega. He lives in Broward County and had this to say about the proposed amendment.
While there are a lot of issues on the table this election, I feel that the most compelling issue is Amendment 4. All matters of suffrage should fall to the people, not at the whim of whoever is in the governor's office. The right to vote is essential. All other rights come from it.
An investigation by the Palm Beach Post has found that under Governor Rick Scott, Florida has restored rights to the lowest percentage of blacks in 50 years. So let's talk about the Amendment 4, 305-995-1800. Adam Smith, the Tampa Bay Times political editor, is still with us, and we're joined now by WLRN's Nadege Green here in Miami. Nadege, talk to us a little bit about what voters will be deciding with this amendment.
So they would essentially be restoring the right to vote for former felons, people who have a felony conviction, who just can't vote. I spoke to a number of former felons while they were out canvassing or just out in the community, and some of them had tried multiple times to get their rights restored and are just like, this process is so laborious and just obscure that it is really hard to actually get your rights restored.
This will automatically restore those rights for most For most felons,
not all felons. So if you have a felony sex crime conviction or murder, your rights would not be restored under this amendment. Everyone else, once you've completed the term of your sentence or the terms of your release, then you would be able to vote automatically if this passes.
Adam Smith, it's important to note that this amendment would make this permanent. In the past, depending on who was governor, rights were more easily restored or not. Under Rick Scott, for the last 8 years, as Nod Edge pointed out, it's been very difficult if you've been incarcerated to go before Rick Scott and successfully convince him and his cabinet to get rights restored. Other governors have gone another way on this. This amendment would make this permanent. It's also important to note it has strong bipartisan support. Based on what we know, Amendment 4 is likely to pass. This is not a partisan issue. The majority of voters out there seem to think this is a common sense thing to do, correct?
Yes, it does have strong bipartisan support. You know it's got strong bipartisan support when the Koch brothers and the ACLU both strongly support this measure.
I have common cause on it, yeah.
But that said, I'm not sure. You know, it does take 60%, so I don't at all think it's a given this will pass. I think it could be close.
You do. And, you know, speaking of that, there's 12 amendments on the ballot. So it's a high bar for any of them to pass, for voters to wade through all of this ballot language when they go to the ballot box.
Yeah. I mean, ballot fatigue. I think you're going to see a lot of that. And that's one of the good reasons for voting early, is you can get that out of the way and minimize lines.
Yeah. One thing we have in common as Floridians is the number of constitutional amendments that are greeted on our ballot. But Nadege, this one particularly, and there's a few here and there that are motivating some voters to go to the polls beyond the race for governor, beyond the U.S. Senate race or local races, in terms of issues, cold, hard issues, minus the personalities. This is one of those that voters have been identifying as a motivating factor in them turning out.
Absolutely. I think just by the sheer numbers, 1.5 million Floridians who are impacted by this, it is very real that you may know someone who is impacted by this, or family members of someone impacted by this. I know that the folks who are, and also this is one of the amendments that has had a lot of canvassing and getting out education into the community about it, and very little opposition, right? And so people are out in the community teaching about Amendment 4 and saying, hey, I'm affected by this. And also, as they talk to people who can't vote, they're telling them, even though you can't vote, get your family to vote on your behalf. And I think that is a very appealing thing to say, you know, get, you are an ambassador, and you get your family to vote on your behalf. You get your friends to vote on your behalf, because this is important. And I think that sticks with voters.
Let's go to Mohammed in Orlando. Hey, Mohammed, thanks for calling from Orlando. So excited to be on the air there now in the I-4 corridor, Central Florida. How will you vote on Amendment 4?
I don't know yet. I have to read. I haven't voted yet, so I will have to read it, and I will vote for the criminals to get a chance to come back sometime after they have paid their, you know, whatever penalty they went through. So I'm happy that you're taking my call, because I have a few stuff listed here, and I will take 20 seconds if you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm very, very excited about finding this station right now, and we're able to listen to a calling program, and I feel excited about it, because our local stations, you know, in Orlando, the two main Republican stations, WDBO and
Mohammed, we appreciate
well,
you listening.
Well, you know, we are on actually statewide, and we are engaged in discussing all of these issues from both sides of the aisle. So I'm glad we're on the air in Orlando. How are you going to, you don't know yet how you're going to vote on Amendment 4?
Yes, I know I will reinstate them, and that's what I'm, but my main question is still coming. What I want is, talk to them about that, because I am fed up with the trash that is polluting the air from these stations.
Mohammed, we get it. Yeah,
we got you.
Sweat.
All right.
You got to take advantage when you get on the air. You got to get right to that question. That way
that's
we can,
right. And
we
do we have any more calls on Amendment 4?
We do. Because Vivian in Lakeland. Let's go ahead with Vivian in Lakeland. You've been patient. Go ahead, Vivian.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm 61 years old now, but as a 19-year-old with no previous convictions, I got caught with a few pot plants and was sentenced to a year and a day in prison. By the way, I was a single mother at the time. And when I got out, I had no idea that I didn't even have my civil rights. And I had
Oh, we dropped the call, Vivian.
We lost her, but, you know, Nadege, that happens a lot, doesn't it? When someone serves their time,
that does.
They might not realize that they are not franchised to vote.
People don't always realize it up until they actually go out to vote, and then they find out that you actually cannot vote. And there are some cases where you'll register to vote, and you get a voter's registration card, even though you're not supposed to vote, and then it's not up until you show up on election day that you find out you can't vote. So that is very real, that people may have a felony conviction. And in the state of Florida, there are very minor things that are considered felonies, right? And so you may not think that your crime rose to the level of this, and then you show up to vote, and then you're told you can't because of this thing.
And it's the Florida Roundup statewide from Florida Public Radio. Calls from across the state. Karen is in Wilton Manors. Hi, Karen. How will you vote on Amendment 4?
Well, I have already voted, and I voted yes. And I was canvassing last night, and one of the things I tell people about Amendment 4 is that there's estimated to be at least 10,000 veterans who would have their voting rights restored. And I think that that's been a point that's been unfortunately underplayed. Certainly, we talk about the overall 1.4 estimated Floridians. But the idea that veterans who served our country have had their voting rights removed is pretty outrageous when I talk about that when I'm canvassing.
Yeah, thanks for pointing that out. Adam Smith, there is a significant veteran population, and it's really remarkable to think about the fact that we're talking about more than a million people in this state. If it passes, that is going to change the electorate over time.
I heard one expert describe this, if it passes, as the most significant enfranchisement of voters since the Civil Rights Act. I mean, it's pretty extraordinary. We're in this virtually unique situation in Florida where we disenfranchise so many voters through this unusual requirement.
I mean, we're talking about, 15% of the state's population, something like that?
It's amazing.
It's a huge chunk.
Well, figure there's roughly about 13.5 million Floridians who are registered to vote, and this would add about 1.5 million if it were to pass.
Right, and even put in context statewide, there are about 6 million people who can't vote because they have felony convictions. Mm-hmm. 1.5 million are in the state of Florida alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Amendment 4 is a big deal when it comes to this movement. And it is a national movement, criminal justice reform movement. As Adam pointed out, you have the conservative Koch brothers. You have the ACLU finding common cause, very unusually on an issue, criminal justice reform. And this is a big piece of it, this whole idea of restoring the rights of those who've been incarcerated and just reducing the carceral state more broadly. You know, out of all the amendments on the ballot, Nadege, this one, and I think the one that we've talked about on this program before, the one that would ban dog racing in Florida.
Yeah.
These are driving a lot of sense of emotion and also fair play for voters. And they're easy for voters to understand and get what they're about, you know?
Absolutely. And especially here, in the state of Florida, but especially here in South Florida, this is something that is really resonating within the Black community, because we know that disproportionately the criminal justice system impacts Black men and Black women in the state of Florida. And under Rick Scott, I think Black people accounted for 27% of the restorations. He restored more voters' rights restorations for white people. And so there is all of these issues that are coming out, and that is directly from the Palm Beach Post reporting, mm-hmm. an amazing piece of journalism on what is happening under Rick Scott's administration when it came to restoring the rights to vote and who got their rights restored. And so what people are saying is this should not be in the hands of one person, that this should just be automatic so that you're not dealing with these very clear discrepancies over who get their rights restored and with no clear process on how that gets to happen.
Adam, real quick, is it easier for this kind of amendment to get that 60% threshold in a midterm election or during a presidential year, in your estimation?
Oh, I think it would definitely be easier in a presidential because you just have higher turnout.
Adam Smith covers politics for the Tampa Bay Times. He's been with us the entire hour, giving us the view of the Gulf Coast, but also of the entire Sunshine State. And Nadege Green covers a number of different topics for us in South Florida, in Miami, at WLRN. Nadege and Adam, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, Great insights from you. Thanks, guys. And that is our show for today. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Broadcasting in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Our producer is Bridget O'Brien.
Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming. Also, our Technical Director, the Director of Radio Operations, is Peter Maritz. Our theme music provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back next week. Have a great week.